Right, you are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime, from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
Yo.
And me, Brian. Okay, on this week's episode, we're talking all our regular things, but I think me and Niall have got a few extra things to talk about as well.
Ooh. Late run-ins, yeah.
If Dwayne may have, he may be keeping his powder dry. Or maybe he figured this was enough things to watch in a week. Why add more?
You just gotta let us expand ourselves and then come crushing in what is secret pick that would trump all of ours.
But first up, Dragon Ball Super Episode 78. The gods of every universe in shock! Losers erased in the Tournament of Power.
I mean, like, it's given away in the title, but we kind of known for the last how many episodes that was the case?
Yes, because we knew from the publicity materials. And then if you'd missed all the publicity materials, you'd have seen it from the next episode preview. And if you missed that, the title was going to tell you anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Unless they do some kind of thing where, you know, they use, let's say, I don't know, Super Dragon Balls to wish all the realities back into reality. Goku's like the worst villain we've ever seen in Dragon Ball.
Yeah. Like, whenever about destroying a planet, he's destroying entire universes, multiple universes. Not even the god of destruction can do that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, like you were saying, Brian, I don't think incompetence is an excuse for this case.
But at the same time, he was going to ask Zeno nicely if not to destroy the universes. And he was told not to. And I wonder whether those guys telling him not to are being a little bit presumptuous.
Well, I don't know. That one of those angels gives him like the stink eye of like, Goku, shut the fuck up right now or else I'll destroy you. It seemed to be the suggestion.
Yeah, but I think maybe if Goku had asked and explained it.
Well, you know, they realize that Zeno's, they're both capricious children. So if you push him too far, they might say, I'm bored now. Blam, and everything's gone.
Yeah, yeah. Like every interaction Goku has with Zeno, like Beerus is just freaking out that he might just decide to destroy all reality.
Goku is a capricious child as well.
That's it. Yeah,
but he doesn't have the ability to erase reality.
Yes.
A Kaioken on top of the Kaioken can do that, I bet. But he does seem to be at least be a little bit perturbed by this going on. But his stance on the matter is, well, I guess I better win then, huh?
Which is like, even if he, best case scenario, if he wins, right, he kills like an uncountable Trillions. Number of people.
Quintillions of lives.
Yeah.
But they get Super Dragon Balls at the end.
those are good, but can they bring back
11 universes? Yeah.
Yes.
Probably.
I'm going to guess either that or everyone will come and live in, or he'll want everybody to live in the same universe so he doesn't have to travel from universe to universe to get into fights with these people anymore.
That'd be nice. Make the universe a bit more interesting. Make Jacko's job very difficult.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
If I recall at the end of like GT, not to discount that now, but Earth was about to blow up, so basically you got Goku, okay, you had the power of, like, to teleport anybody anywhere at the same time as long as we're all like touching your back, so basically you had Goku just carry everybody into the gymnasium and I'll teleport you away to a safe planet before it explodes, so he just did that over and over and over again, so maybe he had to do something like that.
But on universe scale, right.
And they also make it seems to be that the Kai's and the Gods of Destruction won't die because can't the
I don't know. Beerus seems really worried about.
No, but
getting
their
exploded.
World's Kai is worried that how's he going to show his face if his universe is destroyed?
Yeah, I don't think he lives in the universe. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it's the realm of the gods, some kind of separate pocket dimension.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Why would the boss live at work? You know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess like you know, like they had the power of travel between universes, so maybe they exist on that kind of that's in between zone, so please.
But yeah, it seemed like very self-serving. His main worry was that
he would lose face. Oh my god! Oh my god! Without a universe, I suck.
Yeah, if he goes out of a job, what's he gonna do?
I don't know. Sit around and drink tea like he does anyway. Oh dear.
So, what were some of the designs we saw?
Oh, there's some good ones. I'm trying to think of all the different gods of destruction because there's some weird ones.
Yeah, there's the clown.
Big robot one.
Yeah. There was a little fuzzball one.
Yeah.
The woman we see because it's ever freeing him thing. We'll get to that in a little bit. But he's like a big beardy guy.
He looks like a giant dwarf. If that makes sense.
Kind of weird because you've seen most of him so far. I guess because mostly in Beards and Chat, but he's like these kind of smooth skin, cappy, but really lithe and refined. But then they have this guy who's all shaggy and weird looking.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to, they're probably not, based off the look of them, going to have the same thing as Universe 6 and 7 being like very similar to each other. Maybe that's because they're twinned universes and because they're right beside each other that the gods of destruction are so similar. Mm. Or that everything is so similar in the universes, yeah.
Well, there's an elephant one.
Yeah, a big tall pink elephant man. There's like a Egyptian woman one, I guess, to actually fit the Egyptian theme.
Yeah.
It's Universe 1. It's probably our reality.
Yeah, the clown guy has got a mysterious figure under a cloak with him.
That's
right.
Also seems to have brought... they're right. There is just a guy who's like a big fur ball with pink ear sticking out the top.
Yeah.
There's a mouse.
I guess there's dogs, cats, and mice now.
There's a multi-tailed fox. Weirdly isn't from the world with all the foxes.
Well, they could be wolves, I guess.
They could be. There's a creature from the Black Lagoon type looking person, some sort of fish man.
Oh, there is a fish man. There's a load of different variations on Whis as well. There's one with like a really strong chin.
Yeah.
It's kind of a tubby looking dude.
The Kai with the robot, God of Destruction, wears glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the Kais look fairly similar.
They do, but there's a difference because I'm looking at the Cleopatra looking God of Destruction. She's got like a dwarf looking Kai with a big beard.
Yeah.
And a mohawk.
But you have mohawks.
Yeah, I think that's the standard Kai haircut. Yeah.
That is true, yes. I was just looking at the one with glasses has got a floppy mohawk over one eye.
Oh, cool dude.
Yes. yes, there's lots of weirdos show up, but the ones we've got to be concerned about are Universe 6. And of course, Earth brings the most amount of the Earth we're familiar with, brings the largest amount of weirdos with them. Because they want this 3-on-3 fight, because the future. Zeno.
He didn't see the last tournament.
He didn't see the tournament.
He's like, what's a fight? Well, we'll show you one.
So, Universe 9 are going to have an exhibition match against Universe 7. And 3-on-3, and we pick Gohan, Boo, and Goku. And Gohan points out to Goku that maybe it's best to not tell everybody that the universe is on the line.
Yeah. He's also like, Dad, what the fuck did you do? What have you done? My wife and kids, your grandchildren, what are you thinking?
See, my theory is this is all gone to pot is because Bulma's preoccupied with getting ready to give birth to her daughter.
Oh, you mean she could fix it with like a time machine and shit?
Well, no, but she'd be around to stop Goku from doing these things.
That makes sense. She'd get him distracted on some crazy mission or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Try to bring back Vegeta along again. It's like, dude, I just told you, my wife is pregnant. I can't be going nowhere.
I'm sure if you explained to him that if he doesn't enter the tournament, then the universe and his wife and children will be destroyed.
Yeah.
He'd probably be in on it, but I did like him, Vegeta going like, why don't you ask your fucking son to go? And I was like, my son's like a little kid. Wait a minute. Like, I have another son.
Your adult son, idiot.
Thanks for the hint, Vegeta. And Vegeta's just like, fucking hell. This guy.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
I also did like when Pan comes just scooting back.
Well, flying.
Vegeta's going, you're back from granddad's. Have a nice time. I was wondering, which granddad do you mean now? Because Goku is here.
Piccolo.
Did he mean Piccolo? Piccolo is also a granddad. So.
Yes. I think they meant his literal granddad rather than his figurative, actual, better granddad.
Yeah. Because the best thing in this episode is that the granddad getting to go to heaven, or mega heaven, in fact, whatever.
yeah. The realm of the super gods that are above the regular gods.
Because that's the only way they'll get Mr. Boo to... come along as if Mr. Satan accompanies him.
Well, that and Mr. Satan being kind of miffed that Goku didn't come to see him, he went to see Boo.
But it gives it kind of like a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy type feel of having this normal person thrown into this cosmic nonsense.
Well, I mean, that's basically his life, isn't it?
It is, yeah. But this, and this is obviously the biggest scale it's ever been.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm not sure this is even a lie he's going to be able to convince people. It's like, I fought in the tournament to, against all universes. Because it's just like, that sounds crazy, Mr. Satan. We don't believe you. It's a lie too big.
And so the first match is between Boo and Basil.
Nice brush.
Yes. What's his...
Basil the Kicker.
Oh, the Kickers. Yes. Yeah.
But he's a fox man. His name is Basil. It's Basil Brush. I'm not going to take any substitutes.
I've seen people comparing those three to, what, Sonic, Tails, and Knuckles. So he'd be the Knuckles because he's red.
He uses his legs. So
I suppose that's true. Yeah, he's also the one of the three that doesn't wear pants.
Yeah. See, I was hoping though these would be like Man-Wolf from the tournament. In the original Dragon Ball,
The Man Wolves did very well for themselves.
Yes,
in that universe.
World, yeah. Maybe they destroyed the moon, so they didn't turn into men.
I mean, like that happened in the regular universe
exactly,
as well.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so Boo takes a bit of a beating, but then a wicked grin. Well, no, not a wicked grin, but like a sly grin comes across his face as if he's ready to.
Yeah.
As sly as Majin Buu can be, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, we haven't seen him do anything in ages, but you know his specific thing is he can take it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also turn people into sweets.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did like all the gods' reactions to Goku being super forward, I guess. What a rude universe. Oh.
I have to say, of the Kai and the God of Destruction from Universe 9, it seems to be the Kai who's the evil one.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like,
he just looks nice.
I know, but he wants to know the prize. And there is no prize.
This is
yeah, I did
show.
Like the way you know, he's like, no prize. It's like, yes, but if you keep the fucking god of everything entertained, he might decide not to blow you up right fucking now. Like, it's a very threatening situation they're all in.
What's in it for me, though?
Like, not getting destroyed. Maybe, if you do a good job. Oh, dear.
Yeah. And, yeah, of course, I don't think they know that Goku's the one responsible for that being...
No, they specifically say, it's like, hey, this is all Goku's idea. That's why he's allowed to interrupt.
Okay. I can't
remember. And he stands up and he shouts, it's like, hey, guys, I wanted to fight the strongest people in every universe. So they're all going to blame him. He's the villain.
He's been announced
as the villain of the piece. Yes, presuming they all know, everyone else knows the stakes. Although that angel said he wasn't going to tell anyone else. But he said he'd say to Goku?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
We shall see. Yeah, I knew it was one way or the other that they didn't. But I think they just say, yeah, because he says, what did the winners get? Nothing. You just get to continue to exist.
Well, yeah, just in this little... What was it called again? Not a prize fight.
The individual winner... gets Super Dragon Balls.
Yeah, that was
but
it.
Then, but
it,
then the team, shall we say, gets to continue to live.
Yes.
Yeah, I think the guy was asking, like, what did he get for this?
No, it was not for this one. No, it was for the main thing. Yeah.
Right.
Right. Yeah, it was a good episode.
Yeah, I hope it's not going to fall back into bad habits, though, because judging by next episode, it's going to be just... that one whole fight, exhibition match thing. It's just an exhibition match. Just want to, like, you know, have a few little kind of fun little scraps. Just want to kind of get this done in like two episodes, probably. I think if you're going to do a fight per episode, and as well, don't forget after this fight, we'll have the discussion about that, and then leading on to the next fight,
and then
lead on to an episode based on all that fight. I hope it doesn't go that way. I don't want to fall back into battle because it was going so very well with the pacing for so long.
Yeah, but a lot of the previews have only shown half an episode before, so
that's true as well. Yeah, so hopefully they've only shown like the half of the episode that is the Boo fight. And they've done such a good job of the pacing in the last tournament. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt in this one.
And I'm going to assume that most of the fights which don't involve either our guys or
Universe 6's
guys
characters we already know, sure.
Yeah, skipped over.
Which is a bit of a pity because some of these guys look fucking crazy.
Yeah, but I assume there's going to be lots of things where it's like, oh, those guys got wiped out super fast setting up. Oh shit, we've got to face these guys who just killed all those people in super quick time.
Or to be a kind of quick montage of little kind of segments of those fights.
Yes, because I'm assuming it's an elimination tournament, not a league.
So, like, will it be that, like, if all the guys are eliminated from your team, then your universe gets wiped out or something like that?
I think so, because it's 10 on... Well, I'm sure we'll be clear. Maybe you don't have to fight all 10 people in everything.
We
shall see. And then we'll draw up brackets and we'll fill in our poster as it goes along.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Like I said, if you're going to drag Krillin back in, I want him to at least get out of the group, you know?
Sure.
Yeah, I suppose as the thing goes on and further on, the teams all get smaller and smaller as people get killed.
And who knows what the structure of this is? It could be like, you know, 2-on-2 fights or like kind of tag matches, fatal 4-way. Could have anything happening with this many guys in the play.
Yeah, it would be fun if they're going to mess with the rules a bit. I'm guessing elimination would be the case as well, because in the last tournament, the Universe 7 guys were one guy down since Boo didn't pass the written portion. So it was kind of like, having less guys is you're at a disadvantage automatically.
Yeah. It might even be Hell in the Hole. Which I'm sure we'll eventually learn what that is.
Yeah.
In Tiger Mask. Okay, on to the next things. The shorts. Right, first up, Ninja Girl and Samurai Master, episode 18. Was it 18 or it was 19?
19.
Yes. Mm. I made a boo-boo as I was typing this up. Because I originally attributed this title to Haybot. We got Takenaka Hanbi.
All right. Super rare.
In which they convinced Takenaka Hanbi to join Oda's faction.
By getting him to actually Sabu Hideyoshi, of all people, again.
Yes.
Yeah. I think they're attributing all of his successes in history to just dumb luck.
I was reading his wiki page. I think there's like there are conspiracy theorists who think he was replaced at some point because of when he became the guy who unified Japan. He was kind of behaving in a way which didn't resemble the guy we see in this. And history recorded as working under Oda. It's like...
Hmm.
There was a bit of a personality change, and people were like, I bet he was replaced. The only explanation. People don't undergo personality changes at all.
It's like, nope, no, I should shit up his mustache, and it's like, yeah, I'm an idiot.
I faked my own death in a fire. But yes, they convince him because he wants to make the whole of Japan smile together. He's like, oh, I'll work for you.
What a beautiful sentiment.
Yes.
Yeah. Lots of us, well, you know, they're thinking, if you're retiring, you know, when the midst of this conflict going on across the nation, then really you kind of leaving the people behind, you know, how do you feel about that? Like, I got a point there. I probably shouldn't bow out just yet. People are still kind of suffering in my absence. I do something about it with my skills.
Yes.
And he decides to go with Hideyoshi because he's not only bizarrely impressed with Hideyoshi, but he knows Nobunaga doesn't take advisors.
He needs the help. So. Give him a hand.
That's true as well, yeah.
But then, unfortunately, he catches Stupid from...
Kicho.
Kicho, yes.
He catches her airheadedness or something, yeah.
It's not an airheadedness. She's just being nice. She's just trying to help out. No, she's like supportive of her husband in his endeavors. She wants to chip in. Just want to just be on the sidelines all the time. She wants to be there.
I know, but she has a lot of design ideas that...
Well, if you just maybe just listen every once in a while, you know. Even just humor her a bit. Make her feel included.
And that was this week's episode. Mm. Then on to what I, for my money, was the best episode of Bono Bono so far. Episode 31, Chipmunk Finds the Culprit.
Is that because you're watching a lot of
Detective Conan?
Yep. That's
what I think. But also because they went the whole hog, they gave it a different opening theme. It was slightly different musical cues. As Chipmunk was a detective, he was trying to find out who had smeared mud all over his house.
Yeah, and following somewhat logical reasoning.
Yes.
Yep. My favorite bit was where he recreated the mud after cleaning up the mud and then having to clean it again.
Who were the culprits? His
Raccoon and Sister Shaw.
That was it, yeah. Oh, yeah, the suspects rather than the culprits.
They're the kind of assholes who would do that, yeah.
Yes, and they've both got alibis.
Hmm. She doesn't really have an alibi, though, does she?
No, she just makes Chipmunk throw himself out of a tree.
Yeah.
So you confess, right? No, I'd have said that because so and you jump out of the tree if I did say yes, so... Ha-ha.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so he's like, oh, Raccoon, and Raccoon's been fishing with his dad at the river. And then Chipmunk thinks, ah, mud, after he's recreated the crime scene. It's not been raining. Where would you find mud? By the river.
Hmm.
As he's going, he meets Badger, covered in mud.
And it's like, Badger, did you do it? And Badger's like, yeah. It's like, what do you mean, yeah? I still can't tell if Badger is an asshole or just does what people tell him to do.
He does what people tell him to do, really.
Is he secretly an asshole, though?
he probably doesn't know right from wrong too well yet.
Okay.
Yeah, and what had Raccoon paid him? Is it 3 yams?
Three sweet potatoes, yeah.
Yeah, sweet potatoes,
I see. It's like, yeah, just Chipmunk and Garrett, the suspects, on the edge of the cliff. And it's like, okay, I know who did it. It was you! And Bonner was there on the phone and said, what, me? And no, hang
on. Moves him out of the pointing
It
range.
Was you! Oh, me!
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Raccoon.
The hired hit.
Yes, it paid him 3 sweet potatoes to smear mud in Chipmunk's house.
I like the way Raccoon's response was the same as Badger's, like, what are you going to do about it kind of thing. I'm bigger than you.
I just wanted to find out who did it. So, I did it for three sweet potatoes. Well, that's the most of a Badger. I paid him 5 sweet potatoes. Gring, 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 gring.
Yeah.
And then it ends with Raccoon getting beaten up by his dad.
The system works.
For antagonizing Chipmunk to the point that he paid Badger to smear mud all over their house. But no, the execution was what made it, I think. It was...
Yeah.
It was a detective show about a really stupid thing.
It's like it shouldn't have taken as long as it did, and it didn't even take that long to solve.
I've seen that the steamy underbelly of this otherwise wholesome forest.
And the other short we watched, Shonen Ishibe Go Go Gomachan, episode 30. Make it to Ishibe-kun. In which Sugao wants to send a present to Ishibe because it's his birthday next week. Literally, the next episode is Ishibe's birthday.
There's a lot of preparations going on as well, obviously, in the background, besides Sugao Kun's efforts.
Mm.
And basically, the teacher tricks him into child labor.
Yeah, it's like he's actually an accomplished, what would you call that? Whittler?
He's carving little very lifelike models of Ishibe on a wood.
Yeah, yeah. And I did like the bit where it turns out that Yeti is a better person than the teacher.
Yes. Because
initially he's going to smash one of the dolls and he's like, Sugao really likes that doll. I can't smash it. And he's somewhat supportive of him, but he wants to get involved as well. But, you know, the teacher's just a massive shit.
Yes. Because at the end, Chit and Yeti discover him selling these sculptures.
All over town,
all
yeah.
All over town. And so they beat him up.
Oh, what's the B plot? There's a pair of twins who can't get a job.
Oh, that's it, yes.
Oh, that was it.
Yes, I'd forgotten all about that.
I was trying to remember, I was like, what was the... Oh, yeah, yeah, because I remember them sitting at the fountain with ice cream and then they feed it to the local seal. and isn't the granddad has a job for them? And they're like, finally, we'll get do some real work, do some real good out there. But it's for a magic show.
Yes, it's a mini version of The Prestige.
Yeah, pretty much.
So one of these twins will die next episode.
I mean, the good thing about this show, we kind of know that they may be reoccurring characters. If not in their own plot, they'll show up, because we've seen the grumpy guy who loves cats.
Yeah.
The guy who wanted to go walking with Pepe Pay was in this episode as well.
Yeah. This is another part of the company now.
Yes, so I'm sure they'll show up again whenever twins are needed.
Well, Granddad does love putting on a lot of kind of company functions and events. Team building, I suppose, and all that. So we'll probably see them again.
Seems to love doing that more than actual work.
But, yeah, I'm not actually sure. What is their work? What does he do?
I don't know. Web-related company.
Sure.
This was fun. I like how Yeti sort of has evolved as a character, but not in a way that it's pointed out in the story. You just see him.
Yeah.
He's not constantly hugging Sugao anymore.
He's become kind of domesticated. He's allowed around the house. He's not really causing much fuss, except towards the teacher, because fuck that guy.
Yeah. His parents trust the Yeti more than the teacher.
Yeah, the dad would take time off work, except they can't leave the teacher alone.
That's it, yeah. Because they fear for the teacher's life.
Oh,
as proven
God.
In the previous episode when he...
Yeah, froze himself.
Yes, where they worried about him, so everyone was taking him food.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I do like these characters.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Right, on to the falling stuff. Let's get all the weird stuff out of the way first. So, Haybot episode 20. Haybot-style kitchen battle? In which we got an entire episode which was a cross between Fist of the North Star and Iron Chef, involving dragons who were also woks.
Okie dokie.
And Vocabots. There you go, that's it. That is the entire plot of the episode.
I like most of those things.
It's quite strange. It's Hey Bob. It's not especially strange because it kind of just sticks to those two parodies all the way through.
Right.
And it takes it even further in that it goes and it ends. They think they've all settled, and then another dragon shows up. Because there's four brother dragons who are fighting, trying to get battle to take control of the family restaurant, you see.
Okay. Of course.
And then right at the end, you think it's all over, then it goes into a Fist of the North Star 2 parody. That's its final punchline. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the other thing I watched was the first episode of Space Sentai Q-Ranger, episode 1. The greatest superstars in the universe! And this was as over-the-top as I was hoping. The Earth is conquered before the first 30 seconds of the show.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Let's get this over with, huh?
None of the rest of the episode takes place on Earth. Basically, the villains, who are called Jark Matter, have taken over massive parts of the universe, and they're being battled by the Resistance, who currently only number 3 Rangers, but by the end of episode 1, they number 5.
So 3 people are battling an entire universe-wide invasion.
Yes.
Wow.
This is and it's definitely a Sentai show which has seen Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay.
There's some battle scenes early on which look quite like the bit where they're on the Xandar.
Okay.
So when the sort of the shopping mall type battle bit in there.
Mm.
We get the main hero is a guy called Lucky, who's a space biker, who shows up in the middle of the initial battle and accidentally helps them out when he crashes his motorcycle into half the bad guys. And so he meets these guy, Kira Rangers, and he's like, oh, I want to be one of you guys as well. And they're like, we've got to find one of these orbs, and if it gives you the power, you can become one of us. So they go looking for one, and they go to a planet, they discover a blue dog man who's got one, but he can't activate it because he's lost the will to fight, because he's the last surviving member of his race.
Oh no.
Harsh.
So Lucky gets into a fight with him and beats him. He goes, right, now you can become, when I become a Cure Ranger, you should become one as well, because you already know I'm better than you, so you won't see me die. And so you don't have to worry about seeing all your teammates die before you again.
That's
really
one
fucking
way
mean.
Of building trust.
And then Lucky gets thrown into space by the bad guys. and he's in space, freezing up, and he's like, oh, I'm not going to die until I become a Cure Ranger. And then, out of nowhere, one of these orbs appears, and he turns into a Cure Ranger.
I think Vegeta was training so hard to be a Super Saiyan, and it's like, you get trying so hard, and it's like, this goes, fine, I don't care anymore, and then he became Super Saiyan. It's just gotta let go.
Yeah. He was like, oh, he must have come on this meteor constellation from the meteor storm from the Leo constellation, because it's the Leo orb he's got. Right. And then he surfs back down to the planet on the back of a meteor.
Cool.
And then they combine, then they pull out robots, combine them all, beat the bad guys, da-da-da-da-da. There's five of them now, plus one who will eventually become one because we've seen the publicity material. They've got like an android pilot. So currently the numbers are a dog man, a robot minotaur, a ninja, a cook who looks like the anime character Kaibutsu-kun. I don't know if that's deliberate or unfortunate. Unfortunately, the actor looks like him. And this space biker called Lucky. And also, I can't remember what her name is. I think she might be called Raptor, the android pilot, who will eventually become one as well.
Nice.
So, yeah. And there's two more introduced in the next episode who appear to be thieves. One's a suit actor and one is a human being actor, but they're both playing aliens. And it has the cheapest looking... God, my brain's gone blank. Star Wars bar type scene.
Oh,
Cantina. Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. Yes. Where it just looks like it's in a tiny cafe, and one of the aliens is just a plush toy, which appears to be pulled on a piece of string.
So, is this worth putting in rotation, or?
Well, you'll have to pirate it if you want to. But if you want to check it out, check it out. But, I'm probably going to carry on watching it.
Mm.
It certainly had a lot more energy, and the actors are better than Kamen Rider X-Aid, who had one really good actor, and then they killed that character off. He were too good to be in a tokusatsu series for an entire year. So we'll just wrench a load of pathos out of you. And Niall, what have you been watching?
Well... doing a little bit of cleaning out of the old Crunchyroll queue there, so I stuck it out to the end and watched the rest of Flip Flappers.
Oh, okay.
I guess it turned out kind of average-ish.
Oh.
Yeah, like, well, we kind of, I always thought it was kind of going that way, or had these...
Well, I thought it was either going bad or it was somehow miraculously going to stick the landing, but...
It kind of used kind of intriguing ideas where it was like, you know, they're twins, just parallel dimension, you know, it seems to be access to people as like, you know, thoughts and dreams, so forth like that, yada, yada, yada. And then it's sort of kind of forgetting about those, I'll be exploring those things. And then this whole thing they brought in were, what's her name, Papika's remembering her past about this woman called Mimi. And yeah, it kind of floundered around for a bit and then it just kind of went to, I thought it fairly standard. It was like an old research facility where this woman Mimi was there and Papika was there as well, and they grew up together in this facility. And then Salt, who was like kind of the grumpy guy, head of the Flip Flap group, is he was there like a young researcher, and him and Mimi fell in love and they had a child together. But the scientists wanted to keep Mimi and use her for their own ends to access the pure illusion, which is just basically the realm of the subconscious, so your inside thoughts and all of that, as you kind of surmise anyway. She kind of tries to escape, and basically she escapes. At this time, Coconut, her child, has been born, and her only avenue of escape in the end, she finds, is within the mind of her own daughter. So she basically... she kind of places them inside one kind of area of her occult subconscious, unbeknownst to her. And then when the time is right, she awakens because she wants to protect her only daughter, even when her mortal body is gone like that. And so kind of standard as well. And Papika is like, oh, I want to fight to protect my friend who has been there for me all along. And while like I said, it's just pretty kind of average in the end, and all this kind of potential that we kind of saw in it. it doesn't it just never capitalize on that.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was fine, I guess, but not nearly as exciting as we thought it could have been from the out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like it seemed to set up a potential for a lot of interesting stuff, like if the guys we're following are actually like the bad guys, because surely releasing the world into pure imagination would be kind of bad for a bunch of folks.
Yeah, it's like
that, and taking away someone's memories in order to make them a more different person. They never really addressed that.
Yeah, it's like the bad guy under the hoods were like, it's like Saul's father with the head scientist at the research facility, and he went too far in the illusion that drove him insane. He wanted to like enslave Mimi to access the world and basically try to merge those realms together. We get some kind of cool bits for the previous worlds they've been to over the series now are kind of bleeding into our own reality. So you see all the kind of those weird kind of snow mammoths from the first episode, and that's a giant skull robot from the Tron episode, shall we say.
Yeah, yeah.
They're all kind of show back up again. But otherwise, that is just very standard. And, you know, this bit is kind of disappointed in it overall. This is a shame.
Yeah.
It does seem like, you know, they made like I said, maybe they had enough material for like a short OAV series, but definitely getting the sense when they tried to expand this into like a 20-episode series that they were thinking, oh, we've got a good lot of visual ideas for this.
Yeah.
Narrative isn't really like holding up to kind of keep pace with it. So let's just stick something in here and say, oh, yeah, we've a plot we've seen done before 1,000 times.
Sure.
Well, sure. I could have just left it alone, but it was just still lingering there in the queue. I thought, I've only got like 3 or 4 left, so I might as well just kind of blitz through this. I got to list here up late for a night shift anyway, so I might as well just get it over and done with for my own curiosity. Sure. Yeah. On the other side of that, shorter and more to the point, was the barely anime-related The Red Turtle, which has been nominated for the Oscars recently. And it's gotten a lot of notice in anime circles because it has the involvement of Studio Ghibli and Isao Takahata as artistic consultant. We'll just read this grant. Watching the thing, though, you would never know they were involved in it at all, really. I think it's a French director and primarily kind of French animation companies working on it anyway. It does look very nice. It's a lot like maybe like a French comic or graphic novel kind of job. You know, the backgrounds are very lush and very detailed, and seeing all those kind of movie and come to life is very good. It's basically about like a sailor wash up on a desert island. There's nothing on there but some rocks and sand, some fruit trees and a bamboo forest. He thought, okay, well, I'm going to build a raft and get off this island. But he's thwarted in his every attempt by the Red Turtle, who keeps basically attacking his rafts and destroying them, and he washes it back on the island again. He's got sort of mystery of why this turtle has it in for him. That's never really solved, but it does take an odd turn you maybe wouldn't expect, really. It's interesting. There's not a lot to chew on, though, narrative-wise. It is kind of good in the moment, but as soon as you do the cinema, I haven't really thought about it since until this very moment.
Right, right.
It's okay. It's okay. Like, you know, I thought, like, if you want to go with the of things I've seen in this nature in the last while, that maybe Your Name had a bit more going for it. I think there's a bit more to kind of mull over in that. This is nice and all. But like I said, it's while it looks very nice, it's not much beyond that. It does seem like it's obviously probably aimed maybe more at a younger audience, or at least for an international audience, because there's no dialogue in it at all outside of a few kind of grunts and yells. It's nice in that regard. But yeah, I guess it's nice that it got nominated, but it's not going to win it because Disney put out a thing, so that's not going to have a chance in hell.
Yep, that's how it goes.
But I felt like if you're going to back a horse, and put into that slot, should have probably gone with your name. I think that would have gone over across a little bit better. Mm. That being said, I know your name could be a bit too anime for some people's taste, because the thing has got literally like a minute and a half long opening sequence bit, just like a TV series would. So they may not be able to get past that, even though, you know, half a minute of sound and music, visual to music, is not a high bar to surpass to watch to enjoy a film, but otherwise quite very well made and quite moving as well. Mm. Anyways, so that's barely anime related, as I said, because like, you would not know otherwise. You know, a lot of people coming in there, I heard people kind of whispering behind me as well, and saying, "Oh yeah, it's this new GP thing." No, they barely involved in it. They worked in animation a bit, but you know, any of the kind of trademark things, you wouldn't really be able to pick up on there. There are some kind of little kind of crab things running around in there, or maybe some little cute little interactions that they have, because they're like chasing each other around with branches and kind of looking up with a little kind of, I guess, as puppy dog eyes as a crab can have at the maroon sailor as he's building up his rafts and stuff. Maybe that could be a little bit of their touch in there, but you know, that's an easy thing to co-opt if you've ever seen the Ghibli movie anyway in your lifetime. Anyways, it's nice, but I wouldn't say it's essential.
Okay.
Right, back on to things we've all seen. Time Bokan 24, episode 19. Murasaki Shikibu is actually a... Also, was actually... I've written that down terribly wrong. Was actually a blank.
A club?
Valentine's Day special, yes.
A purple club.
Yes, a club for people who enjoy the colour purple. Not the film.
Yeah.
the literal colour, yeah.
So, the key to this is it's Valentine's Day. There's what I guess is a cameo from the boy band who did the theme tune.
Oh, is that who those guys are? what that has to do with the main plot?
Yeah.
Okay. They came across as assholes.
No, they did. It's only Tokyo was responding that they were.
That's true. I guess they're specifically targeting him.
Yes, he was just being jealous that they were getting all this chocolate. He wasn't.
Mm.
And then Callan shows up with some chocolate and he thinks, oh, these chocolates for me. And then the commander thinks the chocolates are for him as well.
And the bird thinks it's...
Perolino does as well.
Mm.
Oh, well. Actually, as Tokyo points out, Callan is doing a lot recently. He was kind of like standing on his back, watching him for a while before coming in and introducing himself to the next mission.
Maybe that's okay in the future, but not now. No.
Yeah, and even the narrator's disgusted at these three men's behavior before the credits roll.
Yeah, well, one of them is like an old dude, so that's kind of weird.
And one of them is a completely different species.
Yeah. The robot's also disgusted.
Yes, that was because, the robot's disgusted, and then the narrator echoes the robot's disgust.
Yeah.
They go back in time to... I forgot which time period it is. Anyway.
It's the thing of the
Tale
the first
of Genji.
Novel.
Tale of Genji, yes. It was the 12th, 13th century.
Maybe. Like I think that was like year 1000 and something. Yeah.
Yeah, so Kara's like, maybe Genji looks like my boyfriend. Which is obviously to the viewer that that's who the chocolates are for. But not to everybody else. And so she wants to join. They find the club quite quickly. It turns out that it's not a single person who wrote it. It's a club of noble women who enjoy the colour purple. But so Callan wants to join, but she can't because she wears pink.
And your man wants to join, but he can't because he's a man.
Yes.
Yes. Well, who does wear purple that we know is in every
week? Well, Hadley, that she turns up straight away.
Yes.
They say her hair is purple. Her hair is pink, though.
It's kind of mauvey, maybe. Yeah, no, not mauvey. Violet?
All purple,
I guess it's not
everything.
As pink as your other one's outfit, yeah.
So, Bimaggio and her two ladies in waiting, Princess Bimaggio. shows up and she basically says, yeah, I'll join your club if you will let me be the leader and we all write this book.
Good deal. Okay.
They're all very impressed by her, so yeah.
And then there's a club, a men's club, who all dress in blue, and they play a sport. I forgot to write the name of it down.
Kemari.
Yes.
Because initially I thought they were supposed to be a soccer team, and I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Still soccer. That's here. And I was like, okay.
They are dressed like half dressed like a soccer team.
Yeah, they're like wearing a football jersey. Numbers over
on their
the...
backs. They got numbers and names on their backs.
Wearing that over the, what do you call that old priest kind of thing with the tall hats? I've forgotten the name of that uniform.
We're very ignorant. They explained it all in the show as well.
We learned so much history, but we didn't remember any.
It wasn't done in 3-minute rapid fire gag fashion, so we're not retaining any of it.
That's it, yeah.
Oddly enough, that's the proper way, rather than a more measured, even face. We need to have a crowd driven into us sort of in a cram school fashion.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, like, all the history they gave is basically like, and that's a bullshit. It was actually funny. So,
but Dwayne, they put a castle in one night.
Oh no! I mean, in Time Bokan, the history is bullshit. It's actually a joke.
We don't know, Dwayne. We weren't there.
Yes, so they end up having a fan fiction competition, basically.
Yeah, see who can write the best fan fiction.
Yeah, about themselves.
That's so really sad.
This is about Princess Bimasho, and she was surrounded by hot guys at all times. But then a nasty girl in a pink dress, wearing pink, boo, came along saying, oh, you're not pretty enough for the... Oh.
She just used the title of the actual novel, so...
Yeah, there's the character in the thing who was, obviously...
Genji,
Who was the guy they're trying to woo to decide who the winner is. Anyways. Hmm.
I kind of like Bimajo's one better because her villains rode on fake horses.
And also, it all took place at the same time and did veer in all sorts of directions.
Yeah, it was a lot more focused, the story. I think it was just a better story.
But the message of Callan's one
is stupid.
It had one good thing going for it. It was like, yes, like love is kind of just beyond time, you know.
Yeah, but it didn't have like a coherent narrative.
But love can exist beyond time. That's what's important.
Mm.
Power of friendship.
Yeah. And so she wins.
And your man thinks that she's going to give him the chocolate when he gives her those little teardrop things?
Yes, but first of all, we have a fight with a wooden fish.
Oh, that's true, yeah. the most useless robot. It's like, we were trying to scan the priest, but... We hit the bell.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they do explain that Bimajo will be good at writing because she retreats into fantasy every episode. So she just had to apply that.
Yeah.
And when she does it this week, the narrator points out that we'll be doing this joke again next week. With
just so you can't call us out on it. Yeah.
Where because her retreat to fantasy this time is like she's getting a massage.
Mm.
We have seasonal pink Mechabutan.
Yes. Everything is pink.
Oh, yes. That's right. He has to change it out of his jacket as well, so he's wearing a pink jacket.
And basically, the wooden fish mecha can't make any attacks unless anyone hits it, in which case it just makes a nice noise.
Yeah, and it appears to be a sadist.
Yes.
So that's kind of weird.
It's perhaps the most useless mecha. Well, they do admit they weren't aiming at the fish.
Yeah, this was not their plan.
Oh, well. Can you see the Mechabutan Big Bang Punch again, though? That's pretty good.
Hmm.
Haven't put out that one in a while.
Well, I thought this was a better looking episode than the past couple.
Yeah. It seems to have stepped up again, or the main guys are on it, maybe.
But yeah, it was. I liked the fan fiction contest. It was a good twist.
Yeah. It's like. I do like how, Callan, she should be the more kind of stable, more experienced, more well-rounded side of the team, where Tokyo is kind of neophyte, so we expect him to bumble along, but they have these little digs at her in this fashion in episodes two, which I like to kind of, she's ripe for being undermined as well. Yes. She's like not this unassailable paragon of virtue.
No, everybody's useless in this show. Except maybe the robot.
Yeah, I mean, the robot did kill it at that rap competition.
That is true, yes.
Mm.
And Oh yeah, it was. It was Nabashin doing the storyboard in the episode when Nabashin showed up, by the way.
Right.
Okay. He is some sort of fan fiction. Huh?
Exactly. Whatever, he's a real person. He's in all these things.
This is a documentary, after
it's
all.
It's like his Grant Morrison fiction suit. He can travel into anime worlds.
You better watch in case someone else writes you.
Okay, on to Tiger Mask Double, episode 18. Was it 18? Yes.
Yeah?
I'm questioning my numbering because I got one wrong. Spring Tiger is born.
I'm glad they didn't cheap out on her getting ripped.
Yeah. It's a hard episode.
Yeah. Well, it's still technically a Tiger Mask episode.
Good. I suppose, yeah. But we don't say now, though. We've seen him about twice, the whole thing, so the focus was on her.
Mm-hmm. The animation in Tiger Mask's fight is really bad compared to Haruna's fight.
It's so loose, yeah.
Yeah.
So Haruna, she's trying to make a female Tiger Mask to sell to women, and she explains Pujoshi to her.
That's a great word.
Because he's like, women go to wrestling?
Because he's an old dude. He doesn't
what's the world coming to?
And then she goes along. Oh, why did she go to GWM? It's because she bumps into the Candy Pair and they say they've got a contract.
She is best mates with them.
Yes.
Saying, yo, we got a match coming up. Come on, a rematch. Oh, yeah, sure, let's do that.
But then, which one gets appendicitis?
Milk.
Yeah, that's it. Yes, because she's dressed in white. That should be the hint.
What are the names again? Milk and
Mint. Mint.
Yes.
Mint. Yes. Okay.
So they're like, oh, what are we going to do? Well, dear, you're not going to get paid if you don't do this. And then she's like, I'll fight. And then when Miss X hears that Haruna's going to fight, Miss X is like, oh, I'm going to fight then. You're out.
Oh, I want to beat her up.
I want to beat that little girl up.
Little does she know. It's like Mint is like, are you sure? I mean, this is from us. Don't worry about it. Check it out. Hoo-ah! Oh my god!
Can I touch it? You know, she just crunches her core. Yeah. Like, it's pretty great.
Starts feeling her legs and arms as well. It's like,
how do you do this? Oh, I was just messing around with Tiger Mask's equipment. You know, just a little bit here and there. It's nothing major. You know, just a few thousand crunches a day.
Yeah, so apparently if you fiddle around with Tiger Mask equipment, you just get ripped pretty easy.
Well, he does wrestle like robots and stuff.
Yeah. I suppose there's that.
Hanging upside down and killing bears with his bare hands.
So then we get the bulk of the episode is this wrestling tag team wrestling match between Queen and Miss X.
X-Woman.
Oh, sorry.
X-Woman.
Totally yes. Different character.
Yeah. She's not wearing a mask or anything.
Come on. No. Haruna puts on the ladies' tiger mask thing and becomes Spring Tiger.
I mean, she's still wearing the other one's costume, so it doesn't really fit the theme. But whatever.
Hey, it's a better costume than in Air Master, when she was wearing a tiger mask and a waitress costume.
Yeah.
We get some good commentary from Fugawara Mask again. Yeah, he's the kind of duck in from, I guess, the showers and everything. He's like, oh, just in to do the match. Because he knows she's using old school style wrestling.
Yes. Again, this was a weird bit of matching up with what's happening in New Japan, is because there was a great match the weekend before with Minoru Suzuki versus Okada, where he was going after his legs, Okada's legs, all throughout the match. Except he lost, whereas Spring Tiger won by doing the same tactic in this.
Yeah, it was fucking great, though. Like, you would think Haruna, you know, she might, you know, she'd get in the ring, she might just win by scrimmage her teeth and say, no, she fucked up Miss X. Something fierce.
And it was great because, like, any time she got tagged in, Miss X, like, oh, tag me in. And it's like, you got to do what your boss says, I think, says one of the commentators. Because she really wanted to beat her up, and the more Haruna hurt her, the more she wanted, I really want to beat her up. Just like egging her on nearly.
Yeah. But when the few moments where Queen did get to attack Spring Tiger, then she was easily winning on her.
Well, yeah, because she's fucking huge.
She's a heavyweight, like, so.
Yeah.
And the conclusion that Miss X has after she loses is she's never wrestling again.
No.
I did like that. It's like, hey, we got some good polls in. They want to see Miss X, or sorry, X-Woman and Spring Tiger wrestle again. She's like, fucking no.
Both of my legs are in casts. What do you think?
And the nurse is like, oh, Tiger Mask's little sister's here.
Like, you didn't assume it was his girlfriend or anything? All right.
Ew. Well, I suppose they're dead far apart in age.
They're not that far apart in age, and he's just fucking huge. Yeah.
Yeah, and then we also get to a battle with Tiger Mask and Tanahashi versus Toru Yano and Yoshihashi.
And I'm guessing like that was like he's showing all his signature moves and taunts and stuff and that. Because it kept like lovingly showing him go like, what were he shouted out like, I love you or something to the audience.
Yeah, it's Tanahashi.
I'm guessing that's his thing. Yeah, yeah.
And weirdly, in real life, Okada, the current champion in New Japan, says he does want a match with Tiger Mask double. The guy who everyone knows is Kota Ibushi. So this may actually be foreshadowing Chaos versus Tiger Mask in the real world as well as in the cartoon world.
Mm.
And we also get a bit with
your Tiger mate, the Kevin Derek, whose real name is
Takuma. Yes,
that's it.
And Kevin have been climbing up.
Kevin.
Oh, Kevin's going to do a heel turn. He's going to be Dark Kevin.
No, just Kev.
So we're climbing up the giant cliff that
in their underpants, yeah.
Tiger's Den's headquarters sits on top of. And they get to the top of it, and then a guy stands on Takuma's hands. I forgot to make a note of his name because he's a new character.
Oh, yeah, he's the with the sticky up hair. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to enter. They've climbed up here so they can enter Hell in the Hole.
And he's going to train them or something?
Or he's going to fight them. And don't we see the previews, like everybody who Tiger Mask has beat so far is also going to be in this, except for Odin because he's a coward and didn't want to take part.
Yeah.
But yeah, all the main weirdos will be in this fight as well. So I guess that gives a good way for Tiger the Dark to then now beat everybody that Tiger the Mask has beat.
To show he's a significant threat. Yeah.
So looking forward to that. It's moving the plot along a bit after these few side Bumble stories. But this was a great side story. I really like this.
I like this one, I think, the best out of the last couple of ones.
Yeah.
The one last week, it was odd and it was kind of fun, but it was still really weird to me. It's like this high drama being spoiled. All the sweets are gone. Oh, no.
Yeah, it concentrated more on not the wrestling, and that's been my main problem with the last few side stories and stuff. I did like that at the start of this episode, one of the few bits with Tiger Mask where he's talking to your man. He's like, hey, Tiger, you got to come on our next tour. Which is like, okay, does this mean they're done with the side stories for a bit? Like, it's only on when they go on tour that they do the B plots.
Yeah. Well, I guess as well, I know, like, she's on tour, so we now can go back on to what Tiger the Dark is doing and what she's been up to.
Yeah.
Obviously, the other thing I explained last week is Togi Makabe is one of the best known to the general public of the New Japan wrestlers, and he's known for his love of sweets. So that's why you've got to have an episode all about
promoting his blog.
Yes. And he's the guy who gets to, as he's done voice acting before, he gets to play himself. There's a pretty good start of they're doing like a long interview with him on the new English language New Japan site, which is really good from what I've read of it so far. They just put the first half up. They've not got into his sweets yet. They're talking about his early career at the moment. But yeah, their new English site is really good, and they've started translating the interviews they have on the Japanese site. Righty-ho, on to the next of our long-running shows, Classicaloid, episode 18. Mitsura Lloyd and Gyunakun.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Close enough.
Close enough. in which we get some plot.
Yeah, though, kind of unexpected.
Yes, one of the Cadi's dad is not interested in the plot.
Well, that's why it's not progressing, because he doesn't give a fuck about the man.
He wants to get his 1,000 yen that he'd hidden.
That was great. Just for the search and just in case of emergencies.
Oh, dear.
But yes, so if you've not been paying attention, this is the first time that you'd learn that character's name, who we struggled with through most of the recaps we've been doing.
No, I think we got.
I know, but I was going to say, if you'd not been paying attention, yeah. Niall spotted it on the phone, but I don't think anyone's actually said her name.
It's just like an old world's come out, yes. Like full front and all, because her name is in the episode title, so now it's not up for any mistakes.
Yes. We learned her history with Kanai's dad and Bark. And we get to see again the escape with Mozart and Beethoven.
But from, what's his name? What's his name? The main guy who runs that corporation?
Bach.
Bach, sorry. Yes. Yeah, from Bach's point of view. And we get to go like, yeah, as if we didn't know that her dad was already an asshole. It's kind of like, dude, that's kind of a dick move. He's like, oh, yeah, that sounds like a great idea, and I'll give you my answer in a minute. And then basically, like, escaping with some of the dudes, you know.
And Mitsuru's progressed. We learn that she's, like, a AI expert.
Mm.
And so she's going to try and to achieve Bach's plan without needing the classicaloid. So she's created this robot, which she uses to make a robot version of Sosuke. And The A story is that nobody notices.
Yeah. He's so, like, lacking in personality and presence that a really badly fucking painted robot to look like him is totally... Everyone's just like, wow, Sosuke's not being a dick for once. This is great.
But then he goes berserk, and so Beethoven and Mozart have to team up to take care of him. Meanwhile, Bach has gone out for a walk. He accidentally sits down on some wet paint and has to climb into.
Yeah, because he tore the bum of his pants.
Yeah, a local mascot
costume. Yes. Yeah.
I love the fact of that plot because it's kind of like, oh, so he's just as dumb as the rest of them. That's great.
all the classical lawyers kind of, quirks are just kind of wrapped up in their own. Little things which I don't do with their own personalities, composers. So I guess him, he's wrapped up in thought about composing great music. He's great at making songs and things, but he can be a bit oblivious to his own surroundings when he does that. So I like how we have this feels a bit more kind of even towards the other kind of plot heavy episodes before, because you get a good balance of what classical is good at, which is kind of just dicking around like this with these weirdos and, you know, a little bit of movement forward. And it felt a bit kind of more meaningful moving forward, because kind of his dad comes back and we get more background on the origins of classical and all that stuff like that now.
And when Beethoven and Mozart use their music, it's now not clashing with each other. It's in sync.
It's in sync and they're in full control of it as well.
Yeah.
Mm.
But they still need Bach to sort them out.
Duke everything, yeah.
And there's the comedy, of course, because Mozart finds Bach dressed in the costume, and he's like, I want to go next.
And yeah, he's been hassled by children.
Yes. and the dad still does not really want any part of the story, because after he's got his 1,000 yen, he then disappears again.
Yeah, like, I can live off this for a week.
Like, Mitsuru confronts him in the lab, and it's like, well, if you've been all these years, you deserve me. And it's like, oh, well, if you want, like, a bit of money, okay, fine, I can give you, like, you know, like, 100 quid, 100 yen, but, like, you know, I need the rest of it, all right?
Your man's and Ped's comment on the fact that they're having two different conversations. One having like a really deep, like, how could you do this? How could you betray him? It was like, you know, I mean, like 10% is a lot for me. You know, completely different perspectives.
And then she like storms up and say, forget you. I'm going to go on and achieve Bach Samba's dreams. It's goodbye. It's like, phew, well, she's gone. I'm going to get out of here. So it's going to They're about to eat.
Because initially it seems like he's come to rescue Sosuke from his fake interview. How he thought that was an interview, I don't fucking know. But it's just like, oh, I just happened to be coming through.
It's wishful thinking, I think. It's the same way that his robot double ends up going berserk because it demands praise.
Yeah.
That's his thing, is he wants people to praise him, but he doesn't want to do the work to get the praise. So therefore, when somebody shows an interest, yes, he'll go along because he thinks, oh, finally someone's interested in my music.
Well, they must have kidnapped me to perform an audition.
Yeah. Did anybody else find it weird that his medium seems to be like in a trap music, but when he plays the sample for them for Mitsuru's thing on the microphone, he gets put out the air guitar?
Yeah, it's because he thinks he's cooler than he is.
Yes. Yeah, he's not as cool as a robot version of him.
No.
Because everyone's really happy with the great improvements to his personality that the robot version of him initially shows.
Until he works like too hard, you know, and he breaks like the brush while sweeping, and it's like, oh, the fuck's that, Sosuke?
Straight down his fucking throat again. Yeah, it's pretty great. They're all such jerks.
Yeah, so when you got friends like that, why would you go to a mysterious audition in a padded room?
I did like the way the men were reacting to that. Like, and it's like, I thought I told you guys to get me a musician. They was like, well, he was talking like a musician. Someone has a very low opinion of their money making thing in that company. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I think we've got it goes. I think 25 episodes is the count for this.
Okay.
Yeah. It feels like it's trying to make movements towards an ending anyway. But yeah. They'll have room for more. They'll have room for more, probably messing around in between. But if you're going to have the plot move forward, I prefer kind of going this way, where then previous times were kind of swung too far in the plot and they kind of by sacrifice as a result.
Mm. To be fair, that was like 11 episodes ago.
Yes, but they've had time to really hit their stride in the meantime.
Yeah.
Right. On to Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid, episode 5, Toru's Real World Lessons. She thinks she understands it already. In which Fafnir moves to the human world, pretending that he's interested in Toru, but actually he just wants to play more video games.
I did like that. It was basically like his silence and her going like, oh, you really care about me. You know, that kind of thing.
Yes.
She's like, kind of wandering around trying to like find him like a job and place to live and so on and that. Then eventually go to Kobayashi's like friend's house and she's basically, yo, dude, want to play some more Dark Souls? Oh yeah, come on in.
What other games are there? Yeah, so now he's living with Takia and there's no argument required. He's like, oh yeah, sure, you can move in, don't worry.
Well, the dude already is into maids, so I think a butler is probably also a thing he'd be up for.
Mm. Yeah, well, if I recall, he was espousing the virtues of like, you know, no, the old fashioned like Alfred.
His
old hat now. He wants like the kind of the cool, like refined, sleek guys, like from Black Butler, for instance.
You want the sexy young butler? Yeah.
Yeah. We get Toru spying on Kobayashi at work.
Yep, a day in her work, which Kobayashi's good at her job, but has to deal with assholes now and again.
Yeah.
Although that guy getting tripped up several times in a row did make me laugh.
Yeah.
Just the frustration in the kind of animation and in your man's voice of just increasingly every time he tried to get up and falling.
And then the other main sketch was Toru and Kana trying to learn ESP after they see a spoon bender on the TV. And then Kobayashi does some spoon bending. And they're like, oh, humans have got powers we don't have. We've got to learn them. Or rather, Toru's like that and just drags Kana into this.
Yeah.
When they find a book to teach yourself ESP, and then my favorite gag is it goes through all these different stages of teaching yourself ESP, and then it sort of turns into training for martial arts instead.
Yeah,
the final lesson was to fight a bear, and it's like, that's not really, I think you've read the wrong chapter.
Fight a bear with love, give him the burly love hold.
And then there's also little sketches as well, mainly involving Riko and Kana.
Yeah.
Mm.
Not as high on laughs this episode, I thought.
I know. It was a nice moment there in the spoon bending bit where like Toru just can't seem to get the hang of it, and it's like, what? And Kobe's just like, no, but it's okay. Like, you know, this, like, you may have been able to get the hang of this, but that's the other thing that you were good at as well, you know, being a dragon, I imagine, or that. So, you know, just what you're good at, you know?
Mm.
And there's like little wordless kind of, just kind of glances there. She's like, Toru's about to say something, and then I think, says, yeah, you're right. I'll just sit to this. And she feels like a little, I guess, kind of crushed at when she doesn't able to do this thing, you know? And I feel like a little bit, in this kind of small way, Kobayashi is maybe kind of inadvertently kind of saying to her, you know, just stick to do this. You know, don't try anything new or try to learn anything new. You just be who you are, or just use kind of. But this, she's trying to be nice to her, but she may have inadvertently kind of dashed her ambitions a bit, you know?
It likes to stick in these little, like, character moments of, like, their feelings and stuff. I mean, that was in the day at work one as well, where she's been told, hey, you're smiling a lot more lately, Kobayashi. And then at the end she's thinking, like, I didn't used to smile as much. I don't really care about that person I used to be before Toru was in her life. And yeah. It's kind of like, yeah, that's kind of nice. Just these little kind of moments of humanity.
Yeah, it's sweet.
Mm.
Yeah, see, I thought that pause was a... oh no, she's going to cook her tail again joke. Because of the way the shot moves from like face to face to tail to face. It was like, where they don't actually say it, and then the punchline turns is, oh, but most things I can do are destructive.
Yeah.
That seemed to be a bit more meaningful than more for a gag type of thing.
Yeah. I mean, like, you could see how in this show they easily kind of fall, or they would interject it with a gag, but they kind of let the moment sit there for long enough anyway.
Yeah. It's a good show about that.
Mm.
And I'm liking Kobayashi more, like, week to week as well.
Yeah.
While this guy's coming along and giving her an earful, it was like, Kobayashi, want to report on my desk right now? And she's going, yeah. And Toru was like, well, who does this guy think he is? Fucking man after you die. You're just going to take it like that? And then at the end of the day, oh yeah, I kept it with HR and got that guy shit again. So
It's not even her like saying it. Some guy's going like, oh, I heard fucking that he was caught like throwing his weight around and shit, and he got fired. It's like, I wonder who filed him. And like, shot of Kobayashi not paying attention to the conversation. It's just like, yeah, she'll get it sorted in her own time.
She's got a handle on this, man. You don't need fucking dragon magic to solve all your problems.
Yep.
Okay, and on to the final, most complicated thing of the week. So Akka 13 Territory Inspection Department, Episode 5, Overlapping Footprints in the Distance, in which the most amount of stuff was crammed into one episode so far.
Oh my god. Yeah.
So we get two visits, one to fake Alps and one to fake Wild West.
Yeah, and I think that one's going to be continuing next week. So that's, it's not like they crammed two of them into one episode entirely. Thank goodness. There was already enough things going on.
So the crux of it is that Gene has made Nino from hints that Lilliam's gives him.
Like, was Lilliam trying to sabotage the...
Yeah, see, I'm now thinking, is Lilliam behind the game?
Yeah, because
I'm wondering. Yeah, because
we see his brother with Pastis again.
Yeah, and just... also if you have a spy going around following Gene like everywhere, and everyone—not everyone, but at least like three different parties maybe—have access to this spy's information, and he's going like, he's not doing anything unusual. He's not doing anything unusual. He's still not doing anything unusual. But then that spy gets fired. It's like, ooh, what's up with this Gene guy? I don't know what he's doing. You know that way.
I don't think that was Lilliam's brother here. But there was this Lilliam, because Lilliam's world looks different to him.
Was it?
Oh, sorry. I
remember like when he was introduced in last episode, it's like, what the fuck is up with Lilliam? He's way off model. Oh, that's his brother. So that's why.
Yeah.
Also, I think his brother is taller than he is. So.
Okay.
Or it's the other brother who we haven't seen yet.
There's another brother?
Yes, there is.
He has a few brothers, yeah, that they mentioned that. Oh dear. Yeah. It's going to get more confusing. Yeah.
He's on to something though, because like, he pulls up in the car alongside Gene walking by. He said, here, hop in. So your visit to Sweet Sue, how did that go? And half of Gene's like, no, nothing really. That's not what I heard.
And it's like, hey, we have a guy tailing you. And Jean reacts to, oh, fuck, I didn't know I was being tailed. And it's like, don't worry, you were being tailed the entire time, like before this. And he's like, I was being tailed the entire time. Who could this be? And I think he specifically gives him the hint, the person who he wouldn't notice, like, watching him kind of thing. So maybe he suspected his friend because of that.
In first, he does mention that. When I was in Sweets last week, there was a guy who kind of bailed me out of a jam there when I was about to be attacked by these two dudes. Looked pretty familiar. Sounded even more familiar. I wonder who that was.
And yeah, he sounds like this kind of thing has happened to me before, but I didn't have enough information to put like two and two together. Whereas now, obviously, he does.
Mm.
And because he's been made, your man's basically not entirely fired, but fired from the job of tailing him anyway.
He just says, just tell him everything he needs to know and then carry on hanging around with him.
But he was given the option as well. But he was also given the option of like just pretending to be his friend and not say anything to him. Because they said like either option kind of works, but basically the tailing him in disguises and such, it isn't going to fly anymore.
Yeah.
Mm.
And Gene is kind of okay with this overall, because it's like, if a guy be tailed by somebody, I'm glad it was you. Somebody
yeah,
I know.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though this may throw our entire fear up to this point into question, but hey.
Yeah, yeah. Because he does ask him, he's like, dude, did you get me drunk so I tell you secrets?
Well, yes, we also learned that from his drunk that he really respects Chrysler in the same way that Bowie respects Chrysler. So it's like,
yeah.
Okay, right.
He doesn't turn up to a meeting with Moab, actually, because she waits at that bakery.
Yes.
He's like, he doesn't turn up. Where's he been?
Mm.
Well, hasn't he already headed off at that point?
Yeah, but
yeah.
Because Grossula is also on the phone to somebody, he wants to meet somebody, and we don't know who that is.
Yeah, yeah. Your man's heading back to his own place as well, his own district.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just driving in the car, and like, Gene's at the window, and the local kind of is like, fun. You may have noticed that guys like here, a cheap grocer, right? It's just the style of the time. You know, this that guy, right? That's the real one, though. Just walking by the street there.
That was pretty funny. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And apparently this guy he's like the opposite of Gene, but apparently he's like one of the highest.
Ace the exams.
Ace, yeah, he's the ace. It's likely to take over from him now because he's marked down the other guy. But yes, he's opposite personality. Very loud and gregarious.
Very American, you might say. He's kind of getting into the style. He's grown his hair long, too.
Also, more importantly, toast.
Oh, fucking toast! It's bitchin'! You don't even know, man.
You're radishy. I bought this food from the commoners area. They call it toast.
Toast? Toast? What is this, fat bread? I love the fact that Jean's, what's Jean's sister's, her two stalkers, not her two stalkers, actually, one of her stalkers and the person who's working for her other stalker have kind of become mates now, for lack of a better term. It's weird. So, the prince is, aide and
Maggie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Maggie. I've forgotten the policeman's name again. Yeah. They're like hanging out, like they just, he's calling them up on the phone to do him a solid shit like that.
I mean, it's like that, like Maggie, like he came in because his subordinate was got distracted by all the fancy baked goods in the city. He's like, God damn it, I gotta go and take care of this thing myself. And he falls for the exact same trap.
I thought it was like, oh, you got distracted by baked goods, you son of a bitch. And then he goes like, I want baked goods. That's what I was taking from it.
Yeah. And also your, what's her name from the first episode shows up hoping to...
Oh, Ada.
Yeah, hang out with Gene, but he's already gone.
Yes. And there seems to be some, like, she wanted to hang out with him because she fancies him.
Yes.
Suggestion going on.
That is correct.
More envelopes passed from behind the bar to Gene with another cigarette inside.
Yeah, just to make him look super suspicious. We still don't. I mean, I'm still watching. I still don't entirely trust what he's saying. He's like, is he pretending he didn't know your man was following him, and he's only acting on the information now because he's been told it, and that's the way he would have reacted if he didn't know it, etc., etc.
He's a hard guy to read. I think I think, like, you know, I think he does have something else going on, but he does seem, I think, genuinely a little unaware of things that are circling around him as well.
His reaction seemed like he was actually quite surprised, but the way he treated his friend after, I was kind of like, it's nearly like he's had a long time to come to peace with it. Do you know what I mean?
I think his motivations for whatever he's doing are very, very simplistic. But
probably,
because
yeah.
he's so kind of cagey about it, that's what everyone suspects. He's got something on. Like, still the waters run deep, man. I know the type when I see him.
The shit he seems to be involved in probably looks a bit dirtier than it is, yeah.
And, of course, the episode would then leave off with Gene going out to meet Grassy there out on the plains at sunset, and this dumps us off right there.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe he's just going to actually ask questions pertinent to everything that's going on this time.
He's going to ask him, I've always wanted to tell you, sir, that I've really admired you.
Well, see ya. I've got a lot more inspections to have. As opposed to, you know, questions of like, okay, what's the conspiracy?
Who are you
working for? I don't know what side is which. Yeah. There really is a lot crammed into this one.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I'm bad with names at the best of this, but like it bounces between so many characters in this one that I was like, holy crap. I cannot keep track of this.
Yeah, we've not even got into the stuff about trade and things in the fake Alps.
Yeah, their concern, and this I imagine is a suggestion of why they specifically might want a coup, is because they're self-sufficient, but they don't have much stuff for export, nothing fancy besides they don't make cigarettes, they don't produce barley, I think. Or whatever produce goes to export.
The cold climate can't produce wheat, so...
That's it, yeah.
And it's why that beer you're drinking right now, Mr. Inspector, has to be important. We have our own distilled local spirits here.
Yeah. And you can see how the people, like, seem... based off his thing, and he's really standoffish about it, the whole thing of... they're worried their district is going to be passed by other ones and that those ones will have more power over their district. Yeah.
So again, was that guy feeding him out for what side he's going to fall on? You know? Probably not. I might never see that guy again, but you still, it plants that thought in your mind, though.
Yeah.
Or at least the show has taught you to consider these things.
Question everything.
From that viewpoint.
Sure.
Yeah. I assume we will see all the inspection agency branch leaders again, because that's the final volume of the manga, is all the branch leaders on the cover. We've not even met half of them yet, but yeah, and obviously I was surprised seeing Ada again. Not so surprised to see Gurus, because he's in the area they keep on going back to anyway.
Also, he seems to have some involvement in the whole thing as well. Don't get me wrong, I love toast, but is toast really that friggin' amazing?
Well, I thought that the toast that he got the first time in the cafe was like French toast, but there's no
I thought
France
it was French toast
universe,
as well.
So
yeah.
Just call it toast.
Maybe that's it, because if it's French toast, I totally get it.
It's this amazing thing, sandwich bread. You can toast it.
It doesn't have to be in a sandwich. You can just put stuff on top of it. What? It's called sandwich bread. I mean,
crisp
that's
on the outside and fluffy on the inside.
You can cut it to different thicknesses. It's amazing.
It's impossible. How are they doing this?
And there was, yeah, even Maggie going out was some sort of maneuver from his senior, who was introduced this episode, who I did not check the character page to see what his name was.
But I presume
he's been added to it at this point.
Mm-hmm.
There's a green-haired guy.
Yeah, it seemed to be, because he said it to the prince as like, oh, he just must have left. I don't know what it was about. And then kind of cut back to where he specifically suggests it to Maggie to go out and sort it out himself. Yeah, so he's up to something too. Great.
Or he's up to something on the behalf of somebody else.
Yeah, that's it. But another fucking thing to try and keep track of.
Oh no, that guy hasn't made it yet. He's not on the list.
Hmm. Okay.
We've got Lilliam's older brother and the ginger-haired guy who was introduced this episode, but we've not got that military guy, and we've not got the long-haired, loud guy.
Mm.
But that's steadily stacking up with more and more characters.
Hmm. Yep.
Yeah, because they've also previously added the guy who was the leader of the revolutionaries.
Oh yes, yeah. I've forgotten his name. Yeah, the guy from last week. Sure,
the guy. Yeah, the guy. The guy from definitely not Great Britain. Yeah, still the best thing I think airing. Though I have to say, I think Tiger Mask Double may have come close to it because I really did enjoy that episode a lot.
Yeah, they're all good.
Yes, they're, you're all the best children. So that ends this week's episode. Let's go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. But before we say goodbye, let's find out what's coming up on this week's Secret of the Sailor Madness and Dynamite in the Brain podcasts. People from the Secret of the Sailor Madness, what you got coming up?
Coming up?
Yes. What's your next episode?
Next episode? We have a couple of things. Ticket on the anime thing. And I guess, we're still feeling a bit loved up. We'll be talking about My Love Story, which is like a anime series from a few seasons ago. which great to both of our friends, if we've never really had the time to kind of delve into it. Of course, we've been doing this podcast as well, so we feel a little bit wiped out about it. That's going to be coming up now soon, next week or so, I hope, anyway.
Okay, coming up on Dynamite in the Brain, we've got our pilot episode of the famous anime podcast, in which myself, Anthony, and guest Aaron Long will go through the top 10 2002 anime, and we will decide which ones deserve to be called famous.
Okay.
So if you want to find out what that involves, you'll have to listen to that podcast. And I have to warn you, it worked quite well, so we'll be doing more of them.
Oh.
But we'll also be back here next week for more Let's Go. Goodbye.
Bye.
Ta-ta.